Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Public Health Matters, part of the Pharmacy Times Pharmacy Focus podcast series. I'm so excited to have another incredible guest with me here today, Dr. Sandra Leal. She has so many accolades and honors to her credit. I want to let her say what is most important to her, but her current role with CVS Health is what the topic of today is. And as another fellow public health champion, I am just thrilled to be able to interview her today. And with that, Dr. Leal, can you introduce yourself to our audience for those of us listening at home or for those of us watching on YouTube?
Sure. So it's great to be here, Christina. Thank you so much for having me. And I love talking about the role of pharmacists in public health. It's been my passion, I think very similar to your passion, to see how pharmacists could advance the profession in this area. So I'm currently the Vice President for Pharmacy Practice Innovation and Advocacy at CVS Health, and it's been really great to work in this area, really looking at the opportunities of the expanded role of the pharmacist and what we can do to really fill in the gap on public health and primary care. So I'm also the immediate past president of the American Pharmacists Association. So it's been a busy 3 weeks. Three years. I just finished my term in March of this past year, and between the serving as president and being on the board, it was a 6-year commitment with APHA that I was really, really happy to participate in, especially during the time of the pandemic. I think I probably got placed in this role for whatever reason during this time, and it was one of the most incredible experiences and opportunities that I've had. Just some other things that I'm currently involved with. I sit on the board of the National Center for Farm Worker Health. That's been a passion of mine for many, many years. My father was a farm worker. And so I always figured that if we could do really good work for people that are most challenged, the farm workers that have, language barriers, that have challenges accessing care, that have access issues, we could really do a lot for anybody else because, working with medically underserved populations and populations that struggle has always been a part of my career and really trying to advance how pharmacists can play a key role in being able to do that.
Yeah, I just, I've had the joy and pleasure of kind of following your career along for the past probably 2.5-3 years. So right around the time that I believe you were announced as the incoming president. And then when you transitioned to this new role from your previous position, and still, very, very much an advocate for the work at the border and migrant health, which I very much appreciate and is also near and dear to my heart. So as far as this whirlwind that's been your leadership journey, can you tell me a little bit about how that came to be? Because I think, a lot of times people don't know how the sausage is made. And I was just finished reading this book. It's called 2 Weeks Notice by Amy Porterfield. And she talks about how a lot of times we judge ourselves to people, based on what their, what their outward appearance is, what they're doing. But we don't really talk about, the back end, right? So don't ever judge your back end on somebody else's front end. So I would love to hear a little bit about, sort of how you came to be in all of your leadership roles and really what the importance of being a woman of color is for representation within healthcare and the profession of pharmacy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, one of the reasons I ended up becoming a pharmacist was because of some of the barriers my own parents experienced in trying to access care. I grew up on the border in Nogales, Arizona, and I still live in Tucson, and my mom still lives in Rio Rico. And so whenever we needed access to care, we had questions about anything, we would go to the pharmacist in Mexico, the pharmacies in Mexico to receive our care. And mostly because we couldn't find providers in our community that spoke the language that was very predominant in my community, which was Spanish. So that really was one of the reasons why I became a pharmacist. I wanted to be a provider that could speak the language, have, the culture of the community that I work with. And, in my family, we had a lot of family members that had type 2 diabetes. So that was always a real important area for me to focus on and deliver care around that area. So to answer your question about my journey, when I started in pharmacy school, my goal was to essentially come back to my community and provide care. And so I ended up working at a federally qualified health center for 14 years and really developed and designed a diabetes program. Essentially, it was really embedded in the community to be able to provide diabetes care for people that would otherwise have challenges to either see an endocrinologist or afford a copay. I mean, just significant challenges that were very common in my community. And so over time, I did that for about 14 years and developed a very enhanced collaborative practice model where the pharmacists were embedded in the care team. And so the opportunity arose to go over to the University of Arizona, and they had a startup at the time, Symphony Rx, that was doing medication therapy management right when Part D passed and MTM was authorized. So I was working alongside them and thought,
yeah, hey, I remember those days.
Yeah, exactly.
Managed care at that time.
Well, what happened with that, I was like, well, I can do this work that I'm doing at the FKC, and or we can try to take this model and try to scale these types of efforts nationally and then use tools to reach people that were having trouble, you know, being reached. So we essentially, not we, but myself, I ended up moving over as vice president for innovation there and like looking at the models that were implemented in the FKC, but trying to scale those nationally through telehealth models and trying to reach rural communities. Communities that had language barriers or had access to care issues. That was my reason for moving over to that organization. And then with time, you know, all of this work around the role of the pharmacist, what I kept seeing as a barrier is the recognition for our services to be able to do this more as a usual care, as opposed to like a best practice, or, you know, if you get lucky and you get to see a pharmacist in this kind of way, then you get this additional service. I wanted it to become the standard of care of how pharmacists are part of the team, how they help manage people who have, you know, issues with chronic conditions, acute conditions, whatever, as it relates to their medical issues or medicine issues specifically, and then be able to roll out and work on ways to be able to like leverage that resource. So when the opportunity arose to come to CVS Health, I came in through the medical affairs side at Aetna. And it was really to look at the role of a pharmacist in medical affairs and see how we could look at that expanded scope opportunity and look at it from that payer lens versus what I was trying to do historically was like knock on door of payers and whoever would listen to say, hey, can you recognize pharmacists for their expanded scope opportunities? What if we actually, you know, we're doing it from the other side, from the Aetna side?
Like you're on the inside.
Yeah, it was exactly
so
that.
So cool.
And so in my role now, I've sort of moved over a little bit over to the pharmacy side, and we're looking at that same thing. We're looking at expanded scope. We're looking at the massive impact pharmacists had during the pandemic and seeing how we can retain, you know, those flexibilities, the recognition from the federal government, and then also payers on all of these clinical opportunities. We have to fill in the gap to make sure we're providing a safety net for people, to be advocates for patients. Especially, you know, we identified so many barriers to care during the pandemic, social determinants, things that we know pharmacists can address because of the relationships, the trust, the frequency of time that people come into that pharmacy or the pharmacist and have that relationship to be able to do that. So I feel like I'm in, you know, it's sort of funny because that happened during the same time I was president. I'm like, I am in this epicenter of all of this stuff happening in my and I never, if you would have asked me when I was in pharmacy school or before, if I ever imagined myself in one as president of APHA and two working, you know, for this big organization that is like, you know, leads in hiring pharmacists, I would have probably said, no, I don't think so. I'll probably be seeing patients. So I sort of changed my trajectory, but it was all because I saw the need to really, you know, impact more of that, like population health, policy, legislation, and then trying to make a big impact for patients and the profession.
Wow, what an incredible journey. And even though I think I've heard pieces of it before, it's still like so inspiring as someone else who really, you know, wants to see more representation in the C-suite, right? Let's just be honest. I feel like there's a ceiling, right? There's this glass ceiling within, you know, pharmacy, but then there's also a color barrier as well. So I feel like even as a woman, like even if we do get beyond that point, it's even more difficult to see people who look like you, you know, and it's hard because I think oftentimes when I speak to, you know, younger pharmacists or, you know, student pharmacists, they're like, you know, how did you do it? How did you get there? And it's like, you know, it's this whole thought process around if there's no seat for you at the table, you need to build your own table. And I feel like that's really been, you know, very much part of your trajectory. You know, you're like, oh, you don't have somebody that's doing that? I can help you. Like, you know, oh, you guys don't prioritize migrant workers and farm workers? Oh, I'm going to be on their organizational board. Like, I just think it's so awesome.
Well, and it's been so interesting, both from a pharmacy perspective, and then just to your point, you know, I was the 11th woman pharmacist president of the American Pharmacists Association.
Crazy.
166. So I remember the first time I walked into the boardroom of APHA and I saw the wall of presidents. I'm like, oh my gosh, we one need a lot more diversity. And then we need women just in general. I mean, it was so lopsided. So that even that experience of walking in there, I'm like, one day my portrait will be on the wall. So I'm super excited that, you know, I can check the box on that. But even to the point of pharmacist representation, a couple of the groups that I joined initially, my first board was the Association of Clinicians for the Underserved, and they had never had a pharmacist sit on the board. And then the National Center for Farm Worker Health, they never had a pharmacist sit on the board for that. So it was just sort of breaking through barriers to make sure pharmacy was represented at those tables. And then to your point, I've been in a lot of now like working in these companies and, you know, boardrooms and investors calls and things like that. And there isn't a lot of diversity. I think it's improving. It's starting to gain more traction, but, you know, it is sometimes interesting to see that there is not that diversity yet. And we still have to push for that. We still have to have our voices heard. And we want to make sure we're representing the communities that we serve. And at the end of the day, that's, you know, I think that's our intention. We just have to be more active in being able to do that effectively.
Yeah. So I recently spoke at the HIV Biomedical Conference, and I met someone there that is from CVS, and I thought it was really interesting. My whole presentation was actually on implementation of pharmacist-led PrEP services, PrEP and PEP care for HIV. And I thought it was so interesting because when they introduced themselves, they told me that they were the National HIV Sexual Health and Health Equity Liaison. And I was like, I didn't even know that this was a position at CVS. Yeah. So I just think it's so cool that you guys are doing all of these things. And I just kind of wanted to know if you could talk a little bit about, I don't want to know about all the secret sauce if you can't tell me, but, but, you know, tell me a little bit about some of these like more unique initiatives, that you guys are working on, specifically in the public health space.
Yeah. And it's so funny because I think I met the same person you met this week. I mean, this is a big organization. And I actually remember reading that title. I'm like, oh, wow, that's great. We have this person doing this work, you know, like just talking about opportunities. I'm talking about it from the lens of the pharmacist and what we can do with HIV PrEP and the scope opportunities. And so those are things that we look at, right? Especially in my role, what we want to do is really, one, maintain and increase the access to pharmacy services. So what are areas of opportunity are out there where we're seeing a lot of traction that we can really jump into? And so when I look at some of the opportunities, we have all of the things that happened during the pandemic and trying to retain those flexibilities and then advocate, you know, with policy and legislation to continue to maintain that post-pandemic. So you've got things like immunization, testing, vaccinations, even treatment. Like we were one of the first and one of the few pharmacies that implemented Paxlovid prescribing when the federal government authorized that. And we implemented Epic in the pharmacy to be able to make sure that we had lab, like access to the lab data, the diagnosis.
Incredible.
That's huge. And to me, it's very foundational to all of these other services that we want to provide because we become part of the care team through that technology, right? That's huge. That's a big part of how we're trying to advance the care that we're doing. The other thing that we're doing is really looking at what else can we target? So women's health, big topic, big area of opportunity. We're seeing expanded scope for hormonal contraceptive prescribing being authorized state by state. We already had 10 states here in CVS Health where we're already prescribing hormonal contraceptives. And what we're trying to do is expand as we're seeing expanded scope opportunities. What other states can we advance this work that we've already been investing in? Just because we know it's such an incredible need. We want to make sure women have the support they need, that they have, you know, advocacy and that they have the information that they need. So that's another area of opportunity where we're leaning into. And we're looking at what else, you know, what other scopes I mentioned earlier, HIV PrEP, smoking cessation, just in looking at the landscape of how quickly things are changing with pharmacy. We're looking at it both from a federal level, but we're also seeing incredible movement on the state level and trying to see where we can fit into make sure we're filling the gaps for patients. We're also partnering, I mentioned Epic, but also our digital solutions. You know, I think the number one thing I get asked is like, how can pharmacists do this if they're so busy? Well, we're leveraging new tools, new technologies. We're able to make sure that we're giving that transparency to people about where their medications are at, so that they're not calling the pharmacy all the time, and that gives the pharmacist more time to do that. But at the end of the day, I think one of the things that's going to be the significant factor in pharmacists being able to do this more is actually getting recognition and sustainability so that we can do this work more, right? It's really hard to do this work if we're not getting that support to create sustainable models and then allocate resources to be able to do that work. And so that's really where we're advocating on all of these efforts to be able to be more effective in doing that. So I know that that comes up quite a bit. So I just definitely wanted to address that. But other than what else is out there? I mean, I look at every day, I look at what other, you know, pandemics or crises are coming out. Mental health, we've got a big issue with that. Obesity, pre-diabetes. I mean, you name it, there's so much opportunity and simply not enough providers of any kind. And we've seen, you know, workforce issues with nursing, with pharmacy, with all these groups. How do we engage? How do we give people, you know, the opportunity and the tools to do their job and be supported in their efforts to try to combat some of these really critical areas that we have to step into?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, just listening to you and hearing you talk, you know, a couple of things came to my mind. I was like, oh, what about like, you know, substance use disorder and like using the pharmacist to help with things like buprenorphine and naltrexone, you know, long acting naltrexone injections, not to mention now Narcan, and being able to assist in getting Narcan out to people who need it. And then, you know, hot off the presses, I just heard today that the FDA, the first board meeting concluded and had unanimous decision to send the OTC progestin only contraceptive pill to the next step for that to be potentially approved for OTC use. So I think, you know, there's a lot of things that we can do within that reproductive health and gender-based health space. I mean, even just thinking about, you know, sexual health, when we think about, you know, PEP and PrEP, like we got to talk about sex, right? When we talk about that. So why are we not doing STI testing and screening in addition to talking about that? I mean, obviously that's part of the assessment, but us as the pharmacists, we should be able to do that. You know, we can send people home with home collection tests. And, you know, that's my thought process is like anything that has a known diagnosis, right? We have a test, it's either positive or it's negative, and is medication intensive, the pharmacist should be able to do it. And I feel like I saw that so much at the health department when I first started working there. You know, at the very beginning of my career, I started working there in 2007 and they'd never had a pharmacist before. And it was just crazy to me that so much of public health, granted, I love my nursing colleagues, but all of the clinical services was run by nursing. And I'm like, how did we miss this boat? Like, how did that happen? Like, how did pharmacists get left off the, you know, left on the shore? So I don't know. I don't know how we do it, but I'm so glad that you guys are, you know, putting your foot in the water and really making some serious waves.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that that's definitely a commitment from CVS that they're really, you know, the organization, the enterprise is really looking at those opportunities and what can we do to help reach the patients for whatever their needs are and be able to do that effectively. So it is a constant conversation. We're constantly scanning the environment to see what makes sense for us to step into. And, but to your point, gosh, there is no, dearth of opportunities. We're talking every day. And I'm glad. Thanks for the update on the OTC birth control. I was waiting on that OTC Narcan, you know, looking at that. What else is coming down the pike that we have to address here pretty quickly?
Absolutely. So I know you spoke a little bit about your, you know, your time at APHA and, you know, this giant 6-year commitment that was your presidency. And now you're post-president, which obviously has a bunch of, you know, I'm sure duties as well. I'm curious, like, of that time, like, what do you feel like was the one, like, most important or biggest accomplishment that you were able to achieve during your tenure?
So I think about a couple of things that really stand out in my mind. And during the pandemic, you know, one of the things that we did was really keep our pharmacists informed about the latest information related to what was happening, related to new guidelines, to, you know, tools that people needed. So that was a huge effort. And we completely revamped how we were doing, even serving as president during that time. My first half of the presidency was completely virtual. My second half started to normalize more. But we ended up doing like these town halls where we would host every other week, at least during my time, and just bring subject matter experts, just keep people up to date and engaged and connected for the most, you know, important information for that time. So I think that was probably one of the biggest things that we did during that time. The other big thing that we did and that was part of my tenure was really investing in the work of the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Task Force. So it started as a task force. And one of the things that I did right before I left is made it like a permanent committee. So it wasn't going to be just a task force, a couple of years, you're done. It's actually now part of the way that APHA does business. And it looks at the, you know, the strategy around how we're more inclusive, how we actually look at policy, how we do strategic planning. And that's to have more representation and really invest in those efforts. So I'm very proud of that work. As I was finishing my term, we had basically a report out of the last 2 to 3 years of work that we did during that initial task force. But now what happened recently is we're actually looking for appointments. I know that was Valerie Prince's, the current president's, task to identify people that would then serve on the permanent committee moving forward. And so I'm really happy that that's now permanent. It's not going to go away. And we're going to continue to make that part of how APHA does business, which is, you know, it's something that you could say that you left something that's going to last. And I think that's going to be a very good investment for the profession moving forward.
I agree. I feel that you've definitely made your mark. And I'm excited to see all of the things that your legacy creates in the future. Because again, as someone else who is, advocate of public health and the expansion of pharmacists in public health, it makes me, very happy to see someone else that is such an advocate and really understands, you know, at the like basic level, you know, why pharmacists probably don't think that they're working in public health, but literally every pharmacist is doing public health. Like, you walk into the pharmacy, you give a vaccination, you're practicing public health. Like,
yeah,
that's me.
Absolutely. And we have to remind pharmacists of that, because I think, you know, it's reminding me of the story that I always used to, you know, work with a medical assistant that I used to work with. I'm like, if you give somebody a vaccine, it's going to last for whatever that duration of coverage with the vaccine. It's an amazing intervention. You're like literally either saving people's lives or saving them from a bad event. And such a rewarding thing. I think sometimes we forget because we're doing the work, but it's so critical just to pause and reflect on what an incredible opportunity we have to be advocates and to really impact public health. So I love, like, that's one of the other things I love to do, just talk about the role pharmacists play, advocacy, how we impact public health. I mean, I just hope people remember, I'm in commencement season, everybody with all these speeches is reminding me why we became a pharmacist. And it's just good to, you know, be reminded of the massive impact we have every day. And then during the pandemic, I mean, my goodness, if you needed an example or to show, you know, proof that pharmacists make a difference, we made a difference.
Yeah, I don't think I could have said that any better. It's so interesting, you know, because I graduated in 2004, but I was one, my class, we had sort of this elective that we could take, which was the APHA pharmacy-based immunization program, which I thought, thinking back, I think it's so hilarious because it was like an option that we could take, but we could take it like right after graduation. And I was like, take that. Seems like it'd be useful, right? And then fast forward to not only being, you know, an avid immunizer, but then being a trainer. So I've been a trainer for APHA since 2008. And so it's funny because I think about all the pharmacists that I've trained, you know, just in my city, and then thinking about like how many times we would do these giant, you know, vaccination trainings. It's pretty incredible to think about not just all the people that you train, but then all those people that went off and how many vaccinations that they administered, and just looking at the profession as a whole, 80% of all vaccinations, I think I heard a recent statistic that 80% of all vaccinations are administered either by a pharmacy or a pharmacist, which is astounding.
Yeah. It is. It's huge. And you look at the opportunities with like testing and being a point of access for people, all of the deferred care that's out there that we have to address. You really need pharmacists to be part of that team to help manage that. And I know that there's all the discussions about why the pharmacist. I'm like, why not? Right? Like we've proven it. We do it. People come to see us way more than others. Sometimes we should leverage that access point. It is, I call it like the entry into healthcare. And, you know, we do that work. We navigate people through whatever issues they're having. We advocate for them. It's mind blowing to me that we haven't done it yet. Like recognize a pharmacist in this role more, just because we need that help.
And I think oftentimes, people forget not only that this is a service that is literally one of the most successful public health initiatives in medical history, right? The vaccination, the fact that we've eliminated things like smallpox and almost polio from the globe, but also that it can be profitable. Like, I think that's the one piece that keeps getting missed. And, you know, even just thinking about like the beginning of the, the vaccine rollout for COVID, when HRSA was offering, you know, such an amazing reimbursement rate, like it's unheard of that you would get $40.44 per vaccination. Like that is just incredibly profitable. And if you have somebody who's specifically doing vaccine management, you could have easily made quite a bit of money during that time. Granted, obviously, there are other vaccinations that you can do that with. I just think about, you know, partnering with LGBTQIA+ centers, you know, and vaccinations around sexual health. One of the things that I did with my clinic when I first started with them is implementing vaccination services, which they had never done. They're like, oh, we do flu every year. I'm like, that's not what this is. Like, that's not what I'm talking about. You know, like, you can't just say you do flu. Like, you need to, like, you have 80% of our, actually almost 90% of our patient population identifies in the LGBTQIA+ space. And they had never even thought about giving like Hep A, Hep B, HPV vaccine. And then all of my HIV positive patients needed like meningococcal, pneumococcal, all the things. And I'm like, we are missing the boat. Like I feel like every primary care office, but in particular, offices that, service special populations, like people who are immunosuppressed, rheumatology offices, oncology offices, OBGYNs. Why are the OBGYNs not administering HPV? Like it drives me batty, right? So like, these are all the things that I would love to just like, at least put that out in the universe and hope that people feel like that is something that they could potentially pursue. You know, with all the burnout in our profession, I'm like, hey guys, public health, we're over here. Water's warm. We're super happy with our job, right? Like, come on over.
No, absolutely. And it just takes collaboration to be able to do that, right? Like just being able to partner together and do that. Cause we know like everybody has struggles, but how do we amplify the work we can do together? So I think that's one of the things that, you know, we shouldn't be thinking of it as competition or anything, but really collaboration. And who wins? At the end of the day, it's the patient that wins. It's a person that needs that care that wins. And I mean, from my perspective, why I went to be a healthcare provider, a pharmacist, was to be able to be an access point and help people when they need to help the most.
Yeah. So, you know, with all of that being said, not that I don't think that you have a crystal ball. However, I do know that you do have your finger on the pulse of the things. So I'm curious, you know, with everything that's happening right now and with the end of the public health declaration emergency happening tomorrow, where do you see pharmacists and public health in the future? Where do you see us? What do you think is going to happen if you had a crystal ball?
Yeah. I mean, I think we're going to continue to make gains, right? I wish it was more like, you know, sign of a pen and boom, we've got HR 1770 approved, our foot in the door for Medicare Part B to get us started. Cause I think that really sets the ball rolling on like the implementation. So one thing is to get recognition. The other one is to actually implement and get the pharmacist part of that process. And you know, I could speak all day about what it takes. It's the credentialing. It's all of that stuff. That's more of the nuts and bolts on it, but that would be awesome. To do federally would be awesome. What we're still going to see is that incremental state-by-state win. And every day I'm hearing, I mean, right now the legislative sessions are active and you're seeing states pass, you know, collaborative practice, school payment.
Maryland just passed.
Maryland, exactly. New York, New Jersey, hormonal contraceptives, tech immunization. So we're gonna move in that direction. I feel like the train has left the station. It's just a matter of how quick and then how we scale that to be able to do this work even more. So I don't think we're ever gonna put it back. It's just a matter of continuing to push and advocate. And you know, we're all learning from each other. Those states that have been successful. This is one thing I love about APHA and NAFPA, the state association group. They talk to each other and they're like, hey, what was successful in this state that we can implement in this state? And what did you show? Who do you talk to? What did you do? So I feel like that momentum is there. And I don't think that's gonna turn back. I just think we need to like all reinvest and just reminding each other why we went in to pharmacy, like really recognize that, you know, pharmacies are access points. They're places where people go. That's the frequency of that is so critical. And that access point is something that we need to invest in and continue to make sure that, you know, that we continue to offer services that people might not get otherwise. That is just a key thing that we just have to keep investing in and doing. And so we'll keep working on it, but I'm excited. I'm excited about the future where things are going. Like I said, I feel like there's tons of work ahead of us. And I think we're excited about public health and what pharmacy does. There's not a single day I wake up that I don't want to do what I do. And I hope that those that are feeling frustrated, like realize, hey, there's all of this positive momentum, this energy. Come talk to us. What can we do to engage you to like move forward in this direction? I'd love to pass the baton right to these individuals to keep moving the profession forward and push forward. So a lot of work to be done, but exciting work.
Absolutely. So I always love to ask my guests this question because I feel like, these little pearls of wisdom are so useful. If you could give any advice to your younger self, what would it be and why?
I probably would say, don't be so hard on yourself and don't, just relax. It's going to be okay. Because I feel like a lot of the time that I was trying to do this work, I was so hard on myself, just trying to go through pharmacy school, like start these practices. And I've been very persistent. So I would tell myself, continue to be persistent, continue to have that passion that you do for what you do, because it's going to be okay. And I think we all go through that with the work that we do. It's hard. It's hard work. If it was easy, everybody would be doing it. But if you really like what you do, it's just going to be okay. And you don't have to worry about what the future is going to turn out to be. I would have never fathomed in 100 years that I would have ever had the opportunity to be at APHA and to be in this particular role. So I'm super excited about where my future is heading. And I always keep thinking, have I peaked? Am I peaking? Is this it? Is it downhill from here? But every day I get surprised.
Thinking you're doing pretty good.
Some new opportunity. I'm like, I guess not yet. There's something else for me, and we'll keep going.
That's so cool. I love that so much. So this has been such an incredible conversation. You're so lovely. You're so gracious and so humble. You are a rock star, right? Like, within our profession. And so, it's so interesting because when I talk to people about, going to meetings and networking and talking to folks, and they're like, who did you talk to? Who did you meet? It's like, you have to remember, like, you're incredible in your own right. And I just like to remind people, like, you have done so many just milestone, just incredible, groundbreaking things. Don't forget to give yourself credit for all of the things that you've done. And also the people that you've, mentored and helped throughout the process, and people that you've probably impacted that you don't even realize that the trajectory of their careers changed because of what you're doing and the example that you're setting. So I just wanted to say thank you.
Well, I will say the same to you, and thank you for everything you've done. I know you've been incredibly active and, just contributing so much to the profession. You mentioned something earlier that I love, how do you train that next group and then amplify yourself? I always said you need like to replicate yourself to really continue to help people more. And so thank you for everything you've done.
I receive that and I affirm that. Thank you. Well, we have come to the end of this episode, and there's so many just fantastic points that were discussed. I hope that our audience comes away more well-informed, and that we have lit a fire under people to go and think about more things related to public health, the profession of pharmacy, and how we move things forward in order to create healthier and happier communities. So with that being said, I'm sure that people probably want to find out more about you or more about CVS Health, or just in general, you know, follow along your journey. And I know you're very active on social media. Would you like to tell people where they can find you, where they can reach out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like LinkedIn is probably my my best platform. I try to post a lot of things about what we're doing actively here at CVS Health, so you can keep a track of some of our efforts. And then on LinkedIn, I also post a lot about just profession, you know, profession activities, how we are advancing the role of the pharmacist, public health, vaccinations. So everything that I can to really promote what we're doing. So that would be the best place. I'm also on Twitter. I don't post nearly as much on Twitter, but LinkedIn is definitely the place to go.
Yes, that's where I'm at. And that's where I found out most of the things that I find out about you is on LinkedIn as well. Awesome. Well, I could probably talk to you for hours, but I want to be mindful and respectful of your time. So, you know, I am just so grateful that we had the opportunity to have this conversation, and just wanted to remind the audience to continue to follow us for more episodes of Public Health Matters, as well as taking a look at Pharmacy Times' other podcast offerings. So this is only one component of the Pharmacy Focus podcast series. So we've got lots of different content out there. Please like and subscribe and comment and let us know what we can do better, or if there's more guests that you would like to see in the future that are incredible, just like Dr. Leal. And with that, I will leave you with this as your host, Dr. Christina Madison, also known as the Public Health Pharmacist. Remember, public health matters.